This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Got Steve Forbes, head basketball coach at Wake Forest, filling in for Wes Durham. Wes is scheduled to be back on Monday, which is great. He's starting to feel a little bit better, which is beautiful news. Coach, we're going to keep this as a Wake Forest flavor before we break down the semis coming up this weekend. Excuse me, the Sweet 16 for both the men and the women. But this day in history, hard to believe, 64 years ago, Bones McKinney, legendary Bones McKinney, became the head basketball coach at Wake Forest. 122-94 was the mark. Had this point guard by the name of Packer. It was a real problem child, but he got through it somehow, some way. Had some pretty good players, you know, Lenny Chappell, the rest of that group, and Wake Forest basketball put on the map, went to a Final Four and all that good stuff during this run. But how about that? Old Bones McKinney, 64 years ago today.
Not even knowing that, Pack, I brought some more props with me because I knew I needed support today to get through this. And so I brought Bones with me here, you know. he's with me. I got all of his books, you know, here with me.
There you go.
So not knowing that, I mean, I've just tried to, being a historian, and you know, you have to understand your program. And this is honest truth. I've got pictures. I got those two books. And I have pictures of Coach Odom.
Oh, yeah.
And Skip. Coach Skip.
Yep.
They sit right in front of my desk every day. And there's a reason, Pat, because I know I want a reminder of where our program has been and where it's going to go again. And I need that reminder every day. So I look at those guys every day when I walk in the office to remind me of where it was and where it's going to be. And you know, Bones and all the, he had a tremendous legacy here. I haven't had a chance to read the books yet because I've been busy, but I've heard so many good things about him. And I was just reading one thing in there about how he was a preacher, and he actually married some of his players. And so I don't know if he would have approved of my honeymoon or not. Maybe he would have, since he was already a coach.
I tell you what, he did have he had a seatbelt on the bench. Now, that might be something you might want to – yeah, I don't know if that's going to work with you because you're active, man. You're going back and forth and everything else, and I'm not sure the seatbelt would work in Winston.
I got to get the steps in. You know, it's really the only exercise that I get. And, you know, the one great thing this year, Pack, is the mask. You know, now it didn't help me against Duke because I got tossed in the first half, but the one thing about the mask is it covers your mouth. And – my mother, God bless her, she's living up there in Lone Tree, Iowa. She asked me the other day, Stephen, she calls me Stephen, do you think maybe you could just wear the mask the rest of your career so I don't have to read your lips? I said, yeah, might not be a bad idea, Mom. And so maybe I'll make that a fashion statement from here on out.
Well, speaking of fashion statements, you know, over my shoulder over here, you can see Josh Pastor sent a face shield sign. And of course, it worked out pretty good. Hey, you know, he's the only dude I know of wearing that face shield. He won an ACC title out of it. So Josh would probably hate having to take that thing off while we were all waiting to get back to normal. But it turned out to be a pretty good luck charm.
I tried it after we played Georgia Tech, but I had so much spit on the mask, I couldn't see, right? It just, you know, I don't know. Josh must have had a wipe, like some of those wipes with him or something all the time, wiping that thing. But I tell you what, Josh did a great job. He had a really good team, and I felt really bad for him, you know, when they played Loyola and Big Moses Wright didn't get a play. But what a story of Moses Wright for where he came from out of high school, pretty under-recruited, didn't have all the quote-unquote stars by his name, to becoming, you know, the player of the year in our league, and then unfortunately didn't get to play in the tournament. But that was a really, 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 really good basketball team and really hard to play. And a little bit like the Cuse, you know, they're different on offense, but they do play some zone that's a little bit harder to attack. We didn't do a very good job against it the first time. Now, we did a lot better job against it the second time and got them out of it, but they were a really hard team to play.
You know, Moses Wright may be the poster for what we're going to have to try to do moving forward. I mean, yeah, you still want to go get, you know, McDonald's All-Americans, yeah, five stars and all that stuff, which is great. But in the day and times that we're living in, you get them for 6 weeks, 6 months at best, and they're gone. See, But Moses Wright's really the perfect story of a guy that really wasn't recruited hard by big time programs that had, you know, kind of had a great body, worked out, played, was wanting to be coached, was eager to be coached, and turned out to be a heck of a player and goes on to be the ACC Player of the Year. I mean, it's really an amazing story, what Moses Wright's all about.
I'm sure Moses had patience, and he probably had people around him that preached patience to him. And that sometimes is the problem with, you know, some kids, is it just they can't block out the noise. They got too many people in their ear telling them things they really don't need to be telling them. And it looks like to me Moses Wright bought into being at Georgia Tech, bought into Josh Pazner, bought into the vision, and took the time to develop, you know, as a player. And he put the time in. And the one great thing about basketball is it's one of the few things in life, typically you get what you deserve. And what I mean by that is you put the time in, you deserve victory, you deserve to get better. And it's apparent to me that he did. And, you know, he's a great story. And there's not a lot of those kind of guys, but he knew that he had to put the time in. And he wasn't trying to, you know, hit a single and land on third base. He went all the way around the bases and finally hit a home run.
We started the show this morning at 7 a.m. Right out of the gate, I said, man, I hope you have your phone with you, because this day and age of the transfer portal, I don't know how your coaches are doing it. And you kid around about, well, I left it in my phone in the car, and you know, Lucy went out and grabbed it for you. Since we've been doing the show, I mean, seriously, how many guys do you think have popped up on the transfer portal?
Oh,
give me a clue.
I have a coach that's in charge of that, so I haven't got a text message yet, but – my guess is probably between 5 or 10. It would probably already be popped in there this morning. I don't know the averages every day, but I know we pay very close attention to it. I thought it was interesting the other night that one player went in the portal and committed to another team in 39 minutes. That might be the record, you know, for in and out. But, you know, I think you got to have patience in the portal, Mark, and I tell my staff that every day. Patience in the portal. We don't want to recruit everybody. We don't have to recruit everybody. We have to find the right fit. Now, that doesn't mean that we're still not recruiting, you know, high school players, because we are. And there's different kind of players in the portal. There's 4-year players leaving, you know, one-time transfers, and there's grad transfers. So you gotta wade through all of that. And then, you know, with COVID, it's made it a little bit tougher to recruit international this year, because you obviously couldn't go over there, and you don't know what the chance, you know, if they can get over here. I did sign a player, Cameron Hildreth, out of London, England, who's a tremendous player, but I've never met him. I've never seen his parents. I mean, I've seen him on Zoom, but, you know, I've never been to London to see him. He's never been to Wake Forest to visit. You know, we beat some really good teams for him, but it's just been a lot more difficult in this COVID era of trying to wade through all of that stuff. But you got to stay on top of it, and by the time you and I are done in an hour, there'll probably be a few more in there as well.
It's a crazy world. Like I said, it's you're under all – listen, coaches are really getting paid a lot of cash, all right? That's number one. So people listening to this are like, oh, hey, that's why you're getting paid a lot of money. That's a given. But the responsibility, like I said, head on a swivel – of making sure you get the right kids. It's one thing to say, oh, yeah, we got this guy. He's averaging 22 points a game. He might not be the right fit or the culture for your program. And when you're trying to build something, you know, you don't want to put a Band-Aid on a tourniquet victim, right? I mean, this has to be the foundation has to be set. And when you're putting together a program, and this will become, you know, year two for you coming up, and hopefully we get out of this pandemic and get back into some type of normalcy, I mean, that is critical, because if the foundation stinks, hey, you know what? You may have a spike, but it won't work long term. So you got to do it right from the get-go.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's hard to know all that when you can't ever leave campus and you can't really look somebody in the eye. You know, and honest truth is, though, Mark, you really don't truly know somebody until you put them through some adversity. You know, and you really don't get to know that until you get them on campus. So it's not ever going to be a perfect science anyway, but you try to limit your mistakes as much as you can by, you know, having the opportunity to go into the house, go into the school, talk to the counselor, talk to the coach, talk to the janitor. I like talking to the janitor to see how respectful, you know, the young man is. And and go in the cafeteria and talk to the cooks and, you know, go, like I said, call the newspaper reporter in town. And you can still do those things, but I'm more of a face-to-face person. I remember the first time I ever got an email, I was very confused on what an email was. The person that was in the office right next to me had sent me an email, and I was like, why didn't you just come over here and talk to me? You know, I was just raised in a little different era. I grew up on a party. When I was a kid, Pack, I had a party line with my grandmother. So if my grandma was on the line, then I couldn't use the phone. I had to ask my grandma to get off the phone so I could make a call. And so, you know, it's just a different, you know, different era. I had three stations. And until I went to college, I never had ESPN or, you know, HBO or any of those things. I just had ABC, NBC, and CBS and PBS. And so everything has kind of really changed, you know, quickly, you know, in the last 30, 40 years.
And that also includes the mindset of who you're recruiting, right? I mean, this new era, not to get off my yard guy, but it's different. You know, a handwritten note, what are you talking about? You know, hey, send me it's a whole different language on the phone versus just having a conversation, whether it be a telephone or text or much less face-to-face. Like you said, you find out, I think, a lot about people when you get right in front of them and you can look them in the eye, when you shake somebody's hand, is it a firm handshake? Do you care? Do you open up the door for somebody? I mean, little things like that will tell you a lot about the character of an individual.
You can't read body language on text.
Right.
And you can't read body language on the phone. And, you know, most kids want to communicate through text. And I have to talk to my staff about that a lot, about, well, did you talk to Mark Packer last night? Yeah, I talked to him. I said, no, did you talk to him or did you text him? Well, I texted him. I said, well, that's not talking.
That's right.
You know, and I think, you know, that's the other thing is we get too caught up in texting, and it's easy. And I like it because I can be doing other things, and I can, you know, I can be doing the Mark Packer show and be texting, or I could, you know, or Wes Durham show, or I can go home and have a conversation with my family while I'm recruiting and texting a kid. But there's comes a time when you have to, you know, you really have to have a phone call. Now, I will say this about recruiting. Maybe the COVID era has changed it to where we will do more Zooms. I mean, I never did a Zoom until, you know, COVID. Now, it has been, I like it. You get the whole family on there. You get to see them face to face. You can use graphics and film. And they take, it's like having a home visit with really having to, you know, go across the country. I'm not saying it should replace it totally, but I do think that's opened it up for us to understand that we can use some of this new technology to really reach out to kids in a really personal way. And we've been able to use these Zooms a lot. You know, like last night, you know, I didn't get a chance to call you. And typically a Zoom for me probably will last an hour, hour and a half. And so I think that has been one positive coming out of this thing is we'll be able to use that moving forward.
Well, I will say this, though. I mean, the technology is great, but, you know, it doesn't substitute going on a college campus. And I don't care if we're talking men's basketball, golf, rowing, football, you fill in the blank. You know, you get a feel, I think, and this is true even if you're not playing sports, if you're a family that has somebody in high school that wants to say, hey, I'm interested in school X, Y, or Z, even if you're not playing sports, you got to walk on the campus and get a vibe and a feel and go, guess what? I belong here. There'll be places you go and you go, you know what? I know it's great. My friends love it here, but I just don't think I fit here. I mean, that's all part of it.
Pack, how do you pick a college and you've never been to it?
I don't know.
I'm not complaining here, but we've never had a kid visit Wake Forest since I have had the job. And what is this disadvantage for us? Because as you know, what a beautiful, unbelievable campus that we have. You know, and facilities and, you know, tremendous professors and all the great things that are going on our campus, we haven't even been able to show. And it's like Carter Witt. You know, I owe the world to him. I can't imagine, you know, a top 60 player in the country and his parents and him are getting ready to make a decision. Now, Scott, his dad went to Wake, but you're going to go play for a coach that you never met. You're going to go play on a team you've never met. And the first time you meet me is in the training room doing your physical so you can go to practice. I mean, you think about that. That is crazy. And that's what you're saying. You're asking kids to come play for you and come be on a campus that you've never been to. You've never been in the dorms. You've never been in the classrooms. You've never been in the practice facility. You've never been in the arena. it's a leap of faith. And that's probably why you're going to probably see a lot of more kids in the portal, because there's probably been a lot of mistakes made probably in the last year in recruiting.
Yeah, and I think as fans, and I'm going to speak as, because that's what I am. I'm on the couch watching all these games. You kind of understand where a kid goes, hey, I thought this should be a no-brainer, and I got there, and it just wasn't the right fit. It's nobody's fault. Yeah. It's just the way it is. And at least the transfer portal gives that individual the ability to get up and move instantly. Of course, it, you know, drives coaches nuts and fans nuts and all that stuff. But, you know, there's a two-way street with all of this stuff. And it's a fascinating conversation. But to hear it from you as a coach going through it, I think maybe gives an understanding to fans out there watching and listening now how difficult a proposition this is for all parties involved, the player, the coach, the family, the team, and everything else. It is not easy. Nothing about this is easy.
No, and I think, you know, Pac, I think you got to remember this too. I think, I don't know what the percentages are, but it's a low percentage probably for a coach to lose a player that he didn't want to lose, or the player just, it didn't work out. And there's a lot of reasons for that. A lot of it's playing time. A lot of it is fit. Some of it's patience. Some of it may be academics, social life. You know, there's a lot of factors that go into it. A lot of times it's just a mutual decision, you know, between both coaches. And, you know, we have these talks at the end of the season, and, you know, you lay your plans out for the future, and either they match or they don't. But, you know, there's the exception to the rule where you're sitting in the office and, you know, you have a kid come in and say he wants to leave, and it shocks you. Now, I will tell you this, and I've been coaching 33 years. I've only lost, as an assistant coach and a head coach, I've only lost two starters, maybe up until this year, because, you know, I just inherited a team that I didn't get a recruit, and I didn't meet him until July 25th. But up to this point, I'd only had lost transfer two starters that could have come back in 33 years. And so I felt pretty good about that. And a lot of that's based on your relationship with the players. And, you know, this year was a little bit different just because of, you know, inheriting the program and then not being able to recruit, and then COVID, and then, you know, finally getting your program in place, and then trying, you know, to see who wants to be on the bus and who wants to get off the bus. And ultimately, that's what we all want as head coaches. We want the right people on the bus. And that's, I think you'd ask any coach, that's what they would want.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham right here on ACC Network. As I told you, if you don't know by now, it's a Steve Forbes takeover today. That's what we're doing. Obviously, the games this weekend are going to be unbelievable. I told you about NC State, Georgia Tech, and Louisville on the ladies' side, moving forward to hopefully getting to the Elite Eight. We'll see. And, of course, you got Syracuse, Florida State on the men's side, Sweet 16 games this weekend. Let's talk about the Cuse. Eric Devendorf, star, lighting it up, making everything he looks at, unless Steve Forbes was coaching against him. We'll get to that in a minute. But nevertheless, Eric, great having you back on the show. We had you on last summer. Man, here we go again, right? Double-digit seed, no problem for the Orange.
Here we go again. We talked about it off air. I mean, that zone just hits a little bit different come tourney time. And I mean, coach has been there, it seems, 80 years, right? I mean, he's seen every situation. He's played against every type of player. So there's nothing you could hit him with that he doesn't know or he doesn't recognize. So come tourney time, especially these, you know, past years, it seems we always come to play.
Well, Eric, you probably don't remember me, but I coached at the NCAA tournament against you in 05. I was at Texas A&M your freshman year. And now I'm not going to pretend that I remember this, but in my ear, they tell me that you were 1-for-6 against the Aggies. And we held – I remember that was that run when McNamara went crazy in the Big East tournament, right? But here's what I – and you guys got to the first round, and we had a heck of a game and won. And I saw McNamara in Greensboro. I reminded him of that. He thought that – he didn't think it was so funny. But the one thing I remember about the zone is – you just can't practice it in practice because you don't have the length, Eric, to really simulate what you're going to see. You know, I'm almost thinking you should probably just have tennis rackets on both hands, you know, to try to deflect the ball, because what's so hard about it, and you can explain it, but it's so hard to get it to the corner, you know, because you fake and fade to the corners, and there's no way to get it there to flatten it out, and then you throw it in the middle, and you take that really bad 15-foot shot that your five man's guarding him. And so maybe you can explain to us the ins and outs of the zone, because you know it so well.
Yeah, well, first off, I appreciate you bringing up that great memory. I do remember that Texas A&M. I don't know if I was 1 for 6. I might have to go check the box score, but I didn't have my best game. But you guys had an unbelievable team. I remember AC Law, Joseph Jones. Yeah. You had some good players, but we won't talk too much about that. We'll kind of forget about that, leave that in the past. Yeah. But yeah, that 2-3 zone is different. You know, you've seen the recent years, obviously, personnel, having the athletes, having the guys that can move and be active in the zone. And that's really what makes the zone, you know, energy and effort. And I think with this team early on, guys were, you know, still getting comfortable with the rotations and learning how to play the zone. You know, now you see the zone, guys are moving and working. And you talked about that corner. It's the two weak spots in the zone are the high posts in that short corner area. But when you get in there, if you know, the guys are usually trapping right there, and then they'll send the guy diving down the middle. And we've done a great job, in particular Robert Braswell, of coming over from that weak side and really taking that diver away. That's really the only other option besides that cross-court pass. So energy and effort, activeness, I think those guys have really been bringing it. And then also just knowing the rotations better. You know, but these teams at tournament time, they haven't faced a 2-3 zone. They haven't, and if they have, it's not a Syracuse 2-3 zone. So these guys have done a great job of, you know, learning the zone and just staying active and bringing that energy and effort. So, you know, hopefully we can do it against Houston as well. It's going to be a tough task. They got some shooters, and we really got to focus on rebounding going into Saturday as well.
You're right about the rebounding. And by the way, for the record, it was 1 of 6 from 3. All right, so I don't want you to do too much work going back to the records and the archives. Going, I want to get back at Forbes. I wasn't 1 for 6. But you know what? Speaking of making shots, Buddy Boeheim has been great. I mean, just great in the tournament. But you had a chance to work with him this past summer. You were a tremendous shooter. What did you go through in the summertime in terms of preparation for the upcoming crazy year of COVID basketball?
Yeah, well, he's a much better shooter than I am. I didn't touch the jump shot. You know, if anything, we're just getting reps with the jumpers. Just try to help him put it on the floor, get to his spots. And now you see his game from his freshman year to now, the evolution is super impressive. Him getting to his 1-2 pull-up jumper, and then we see him getting all the way to the rack, and he's trying to get to the free throw line. And also, he's making plays for others. He knows he's a threat on the floor. So now guys are focused on him a little bit more, so he's able to get his teammates involved as well. But the biggest thing for me, what I see for him, is just his confidence level. I mean, his confidence level is through the roof right now. And, Coach, we all know that, you know, when you see a confident player, he could, you know, it's that rim is like the ocean. You know, that's how he's shooting right now. And, you know, I'm super proud of him, super impressed. And because he's a humble and he's a good kid, you don't really see him talk a lot and be vocal. But, you know, I was at the game last round, and, you know, after the game, he was, you know, waving his arms at the crowd and getting pumped up. And that's when I knew, I was like, okay, his confidence is at a whole nother level, and he's rolling right now.
You know, Eric, you brought something up and reminded me when we played you guys, what another thing about the zone is just how hard it is to pass the ball. And I remember we threw it to the short corner to Joseph Jones, and you guys were trapping that short corner, and it's so hard to not only get shots but to make passes against the zone because of the length. And what you said, you guys are so – you understand how to play it. You know the rotations. And the only thing I remember what we could do, we hit short corner, we'd skip it opposite and throw down to the corner quickly to AC Law, and he'd try to go make a play. And like you said, you know, AC was an NBA player. But, you know, I think – when we watch Houston, it's going to be interesting to see how they attack the zone. The one thing that I've seen teams try to do in the middle of the zone is put a smaller guy there, and then everybody kind of fans out, and then he kind of backtrack dribbles to the three-point line and maybe tries to shoot a three over that five man. But I just think it's such a disadvantage in tournament play to have to play against it.
Yeah, well, first off, when they do that, you know, the center's done a good job of recognizing – he is going out and staying back in instead of letting him pull him out of the zone. And the guards have done a much better job towards the end of the season, keeping guys in front of him. I think early on, you know, they're penetrating the zone. And when you penetrate the zone, it's collapsing. And now you're just making decisions. And the big thing is, too, making decisions, right, Coach? You can get it in that short corner. You can get it in that high post. But now you got, you know, 1, 2, 3 seconds to make the right decision. And a lot of times that's tough for players. We saw it against West Virginia. You know, they got it in the high post against Culver. And, you know, he just didn't make the right decision a lot of times. He had two, he picked up two charges against Marek, and he had a couple turnovers where the passes weren't even close. So it's one thing to get it in there into those weak spots. But now you have to have those players in there who can make decisions. And you know, if I was coaching against it, I'm putting my best player in the middle of the zone, my best decision maker. Either, hey, if the center comes down, I got the shot. If not, I can go by and try to make a play. So it's one thing getting in there, but it's another thing, you know, having to make the right decision.
Eric, Coach Boeheim is now making his 20th appearance in the Sweet 16. 20. What is it about him? All right, I mean, you, listen, you've been around him. You played for him. You know the guy. What's the magic sauce about Jim Boeheim?
Just super composed. I mean, he treats every single game. I mean, you could play against Lemoyne. That's our exhibition game before the regular season. He's treating that game the same way he's treating this game Saturday against Houston. And I think that calmness and composure really rubs off on the team. And no matter the situation, no matter the circumstance, no matter the pressure, whatever it is, you know, Coach is going to stay the same way. He's going to be composed. And I know just from playing with him, that really helped me out. You know, it took a lot of pressure on me knowing that the leader of your team is calm and composed in these type of situations. And it's been no different for 46 years, man. Obviously, you have to have good players, but Coach is one of the best ever at putting guys in situations where they can succeed. And he lets just players play. You know, he's not a guy who's going to nitpick or anything like that. If he knows you can play, he knows you can score the ball, he's gonna let you go out there and you know, and play your game.
Let me ask you this, Eric. How do you think Syracuse's offense will handle Houston's pressure? Because as you know, Kelvin Sampson's teams are really tough defensively. They take away a lot of things. They kind of speed you up, and they're their animals on the glass. And so, you know, my question to you would be, how do you think Syracuse will attack Houston against their man-to-man defense?
Well, we played similar teams like this. You talk about Clemson and Virginia Tech. They play the same type of in-your-face defense and get up in you. We got to take care of the ball. We got to move the ball. We can't be stagnant. We can't get into the one-on-one game, you know, because a lot of times when, you know, teams are pressuring, you just try to get by and, you know, play that one-on-one. We got to move the ball. We got to set good screens. You know, they're going to be on Buddy. If we can set good screens and just give him a little opening. He's done a great job of being able to make a decision when he comes off, either having the shot or kicking it to the next guy. So number one thing is take care of the ball. And then we got to match that too, right? We got to be able to match their physicality and play tough and just compete and get after it. It's going to be a tough task, but the way these guys are playing, you know, I'm not doubting anything. You know, I'm looking forward to seeing these guys, you know, playing next weekend in the Final Four and hopefully a national championship.
Can very well happen. Hey, if you're one of the 16, you still got a shot. And we keep saying it, man. Syracuse and double-digit seeds, watch out come tournament time. Eric, listen, it's always a pleasure. Glad you're doing well. I appreciate the insight, and good luck to you boys this weekend.
Appreciate you guys. Have me on next week where we'll talk Final Four.
I like it. I like the attitude.
Hey, good luck, Eric. We'll be rooting for you, buddy. Good luck, man.
That's great.
Thanks, Coach. Appreciate you guys.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
What we've got to do is figure out a way to start the games faster. Obviously, my two pregame speeches were poor. The last two games, we're going to have to switch those up.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea. Uh, You need to get that tattooed. That's what you need to do. That's a tattoo right there somewhere at some easy, point in time.
Easy, easy, Pack. Easy on the tattoos, man. I think I'm the only one in my family that doesn't have one, though. I will tell you that, but that's not happening.
Yeah, it's not happening to me either. I got zero for you on that front. So Jeff Walls was kidding around off the slow starts, and they got the number two seed, and they get to jump on Oregon this weekend, which would be a great game. Again, NC State, the one seed, and they got Indiana and Georgia Tech and Nell Fortner. They've got the number one seed, South Carolina. So the ladies and the games this weekend will be great, just like the men. But Jeff Walls was talking about the slow start. They're down 25-7 in the first quarter against Northwestern. And, again, kids step up, make plays, makes coaches look good. So with all that said, Steve, let's break it down. Pre-game speeches. What's the art? What's the beauty? What's the science behind all that?
I think there's different styles. You know, some guys are motivators and they do the win one for a Gipper speech. Or then there's guys like me who I like to just kind of say the same thing every game. This is what we do. This is who we are. We talk about our identity. Talk about our matchups. What we're going to run early in the game, kind of script it, offense, defense, couple keys, and then, you know, let's go. You know, I don't like to try to do that. Now, there's times for that, and I've heard some doozies in my day, and then I had one that I used in the NCAA tournament my first year at East Tennessee State that it looked good on TV, and then it backfired on me during the game, and then I had to turn my Twitter off after the game, because I was attacked by every Florida fan that there was. But the best one, Pack, that I've ever heard was, I have to set the stage here. It's 2008. It's number one versus number two. It's Memphis versus Tennessee. It's late in the year. It's a non-conference game. It's not one that you normally play late. It's Memphis is undefeated. We're number two in the country. They're number one. It's Calipari versus Pearl. It's Beale Street. It's College Game Day. It's 8:00 at night. Everybody's in pretty good mood, as you can imagine, by then in the game. Yeah. And I'm sitting there, Pack, and I'm looking across at Priscilla Presley and Justin Timberlake, and I'm elbowing our assistant coaches like, "That's Priscilla Presley, man." And they're like, "Who's that?" I'm like, "That's Elvis's wife, dude. Come on." And so, but before we came out, Coach Pearl gave the one that I remember the most, okay? And I wrote it down. I don't want to get it wrong, but I'm going to kind of, in my best BP voice, is passion, poise, and purpose. Passion, poise, and purpose. Everything we do with a purpose. Poise when they make a run. Poise when they block our shots. Poise when they talk to us. Poise when things get elevated. Listen, I don't know if we're number one in the country, but I do know we're 40 minutes away from being number one in the country. Let's go. Now, that one got me juiced, and we went out there and did it. And we beat Derrick Rose, and they're a great team, and broke their record. And, you know, it was an incredible night. Now, the one that backfired on me as a head coach, I had the camera, you know, like they'll always ask you before the first tournament game, "Hey, do you mind if the cameras come in there?" I'm like, "Oh, no, anytime we can get some publicity, we're going to take it." And so this was my quote. I said, "I've seen national championship Florida. Let me tell you something. Noah, Horford, and Brewer, they're not walking out that tunnel today, boys. The guys coming out that tunnel look just like you. Go out there and take what you deserve." Well, we did that for about a half. We took the lead on the first play of the second half, and then we got whooped. And Delvin Robinson became an NBA prospect after playing us. And Florida went on a run to the Elite Eight and lost to South Carolina to go to the Final Four. But I thought it was kind of funny. You know, I'd coached against, you know, all those guys. And so basically I was just telling my guys, "Hey, listen, you know, we can go out there and play with them." And so we lost. I went back, did my press conference, turned on my phone. There's a lot of hateful things on my Twitter account from some really upset Gator fans. And, you know, really, I was kind of just telling the truth. I mean, Horford, Noah, and Brewer graduated, you know.
They weren't walking through there.
No, but it didn't go so good. So I ended up turning off my phone for couple days, and then everything kind of calmed down.
Yeah, I guess you got to figure that out as a coach, that balance that you can't get too high. I mean, listen, big games, you don't have to say anything, right? I mean, everybody, kids know. Kids know when you're playing somebody of note. Maybe it's sometimes it's the game that's a sleepy game, right? You got the big game next week, and you're playing a team that's 500, and you just got to make sure everybody's awake and alert to understand, hey, let's go take care of our business, and hey, next week we'll worry about playing number two or number four, right, or number one, or whatever the case may be. But got to figure, though, when you get to the tournament, I mean, given what all these student-athletes have been through, men or women, they just want to play, right? I mean, you almost have to calm them down, I would assume, especially coming up this weekend. Hey, you worked that hard. You've had some success. You've had all week in isolation. You're still in the same town. You know, what day is it? Yeah. Tuesday feels like Saturday, which feels like Monday. Who knows what you're doing? And now you got the game. I think these student-athletes, you're going to have to almost tone them down Saturday and Sunday, knowing the importance of the game, and they just want to play. That's got to be the hard part.
Yeah. I think the other thing, I think you're spot on. I also think they're a little nervous. You know, they're a little, you know, they got some butterflies. So sometimes I don't think it's bad to keep it a little bit lighter too, you know, and maybe make them laugh a little bit and lighten it up because there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of pressure in that locker room. There's a lot of pressure in that game. They're feeling it. And so, you know, sometimes I think keeping it light is okay. And that's why I like to kind of keep it the same every game, like you just said. So they don't look at one game any different than the other. And I thought Coach Diefendorf said that earlier about Coach Boeheim. He's the same against, you know, Lemoyne as he is against, you know, Notre Dame. And I think that's the mindset that you want for your team and your staff, is to have that same mindset every game. So, I mean, I don't think tricky speeches, you know, always kind of work, but sometimes they do. You know, and I think you pick a time to use those, and I've done it in the past, and I think, you know, a lot of the very successful coaches, they do that.
Well, I think my favorite story that I've ever heard with any kind of pregame speech, it involved football and involved Lou Holtz in the legendary Notre Dame-Miami football game in South Bend, and Lou, of course, was one of the all-time greats. Anyhow, he could make Mark Packer and 10 guys in the neighborhood sound like you know, the New England Patriots. And so there, here you go. You got the great 1-2, Miami, Notre Dame. And I've heard Notre Dame players tell me this story in the locker room, that Holtz butts through the doors for the game and goes through the whole routine and says at the very end after the rah-rah, but do me one favor. You leave me Jimmy Johnson for me. I want a piece of Jimmy Johnson. Let's go out there and beat my. And they said they came busting through the doors like, man, there's no way they were going to lose that game after 135-pound Lou Holtz said he wanted a piece of Jimmy Johnson's. You know what? Now you leave that for me at the end. That's me, right? And those dudes were ready to let it rip. I've heard that story by too many players. And when you hear the unedited version, it is fantastic. Truly great.
Well,
unbelievable.
Jimmy Johnson's hair weighed more than Lou weighs. So,
what a game.
Lou would have had to get a running start to do that one. You know, he recruited my brother a little bit out of high school in football. And he's one of the unbelievable motivational speakers you're ever going to hear.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a real deal.
No question about that. By the way, before we go to break, real quick, and I know that, again, we talk about all the different sports that are going on. If you did not see, and we promoted it like crazy this week, if you did not see last night's Duke-Syracuse men's lacrosse game, go find it. Because you're talking about high drama, great teams. And again, we just had Michael Sowers on the show. He had 3 goals, 3 assists last night. This was ridiculous how good it was. I'm talking about high energy, 2 unbelievable teams. You had no idea who was going to win this thing. Lead changes left and right. We had 6 ties, 4 lead changes, back and forth, 15-14, your final. Literally came down to the last second of the game. If you want to be entertained, you're looking for something else, I can't find anything good on the tube till the hoops start, go find this game and watch it. Even if you don't know anything about men's lacrosse, you will love it.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Go off the rails.
Good morning, Forbes. You are looking spectacular today.
Coming from you, I really appreciate that. You're such a style icon.
Maybe keep the same underwears on and rock them all the way through to a Final Four.
I'll think about it for a second, and that's about as long as I'll think about it for.
Hide the money. Down in the upper crust on the other side with their long driveways. It's a different life.
Yeah, you think you're cute? Now watch this, man. In about 3 seconds, I'm going to tear the limbs right off your body.
That water was cold. I mean, real cold.
I used to swim when I was young. Now I just go right to the bottom of the pool if I tried. You got 18 trillion marbles and you miss the Hoosiers.
Most improved player to...
Who freezes like that? He looked. He freezes in a perfect spot. When I freeze on the Zoom, it's like, yo...
And tell Wes it's time to get off vacation, okay? Like, get back to work.
China Robinson. There you go. Basketball times. Look at my man. Hey, you. Get in the zone. Time for the Bojangles weekend menu. The boys are excited to hear the word Bojangles. They know it's time for it, brother. Here's what we got for you. It got all kinds of great stuff. Saturday, Duke at Clemson softball. I just told you. Got that thing cranked up this week. They won 18 and 17 straight, respectively. Syracuse at Pitt softball. That's at 2 o'clock. The Hokies and the Cuse. Women's lacrosse at 5 p.m. Georgia Tech and Duke baseball in the evening at 7 Eastern time. Then on Sunday, women's lacrosse with Louisville and Boston College. We go baseball at 1 with Virginia Tech at Pittsburgh. And the final of a four-game tilt in softball, a huge series. Duke at Clemson, all these games right there that you see are on ACC Network. That is your Bojangles weekend menu. All right, Coach, first of all, before we get out of here, I really appreciate the time. We've had fun with you, learning something about basketball and the job you're doing at Wake Forest. And really, I think what all coaches are going through with this transfer portal and other stuff up and above what you have to do, life is not easy. It's a challenge. But if it was easy, everybody would do it, right?
Yeah, I tell my team that every day about winning. If it was easy, everybody would be winning. And we do this job because we love it. And like you do your job because you love it, I do the same. And so we just have to, you know, we have to adjust. And we will, and the players will too. And maybe down the road there'll be some different legislation, you know, when it comes to what we're facing here. But right now, I think, you know, this is where the game is headed, and we're all going to have to make the adjustments in how we recruit and how we build a program and how we find a way to win. But, you know, I after being on here for 3 hours, Mark, I thought maybe I'd want to replace Wes, but I really have no desire to do that now. And so, you know, I almost brought it with me. I sent this picture, I think, to Wes. When I got the job at Wake Forest, I got a bottle of Woodford Reserve, and it has the Wake Forest emblem and the Demon Deacon emblazoned on it. It's the most beautiful bottle you've ever seen. And I know that you're a fan, but I haven't opened it yet. But now that you and I have had this three-hour experience, I think I'm just going to save it for you, and then we'll pop that thing one of these days and we can do the, you know, talk about all the mistakes I made over the last 3 hours.
I tell you what, this is where you're going to get in trouble, because if I didn't have an afternoon radio show, I might be road tripping to Winston-Salem this afternoon. I may have to make a run to Lexington Barbecue tomorrow to store up and get ready to roll for hoops this weekend. And, you know, Winston's right down the road. I might have to stop by with one single ice cube and break that bad boy in with you. That sounds like a plan.
Well, I'm not a very hard person to find, and those for sale signs will be in my yard here, I'm sure, pretty soon. But I live right across from the historic Rinalda Village.
Know where
right
that
across
is.
From the Village Tavern. And so I don't think I'll be hard to find. You can just come down there and take a left on the Audubon Village Trail Drive, and you'll be right at my house. So the door's always open for you, Pack, whenever you want to come.
That sounds good. All right, in 30 seconds. Does the ACC in men's Sweet 16 action sweep, get swept, or split?
I'm going to say split. I'm not going to tell you who because I don't want to get myself in trouble. But that's off the top of my head. I do think both of them have a great chance to win for different reasons. But I think we'll see one of them go to the Final Four.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.